ॐ सहनाववतु सहनोभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा द्विजावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. May the Supreme Lord protect both the teacher and the student, and may he cherish and nourish us both. May we work with full energy, may our study be perfect, and may it give us good results. May we never feel ill will towards others. So yesterday, we saw that if we are in conditioned state of consciousness, if we are identifying with matter, we have an ahankar, posigo, then when it interacts with the modes have a very influential effect on it, to the degree that they will decide, in conjunction with that nasty old fellow called the mind, which body we'll get next. We also saw that if we are identifying correctly as a servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Krishna and the Acharyas, then even though we interact with the modes, they won't affect us. We can be free to act here for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga, and at the end of this life go back to them. So really Krishna was explaining to us very, very simply the subtleties of the transmigration process. As I said yesterday, in the second chapter he was talking more about just the externals of it. You change your body. Yesterday he was looking into the subtle mechanics of it. He also explained to us how he is our maintainer in all spheres. In every, from the smallest to the biggest item, he is our maintainer. And not only materially, but spiritually. Now, all of this has a purpose. He has a purpose in mind. You know, when we do something, we have a purpose in mind, isn't it? Unless we're really tired or spaced out. But usually we have a purpose in mind when we do something. So Krishna, being the Supreme Person, he works pretty much in the same way. So today's class on the 15th chapter will be the last class on this chapter, and here we come to a summation of what he's dealing with in this chapter. So in verses 16 to 18 of today's verses, Krishna is giving a summary of the Vedanta Sutra. Would anyone like to hazard a guess why he's doing that? What's the reason behind him doing this? In light of what we've looked at in the rest of the chapter. Maybe a little esoteric for this time of morning, but we'll give it a try. You should. Yeah? That's good. He's slowly, slowly getting to a point that is very, very close to the bone. Close to the bone means it may be a little painful and difficult for us to deal with. And that is, he's God, we aren't. So he's slowly coming to this point. So in these verses 16 to 18, he's going to explain, in his very psychological way, he's going to explain first the difference between the different kinds of living entities. There are fallible living entities, and there are infallible living entities. And he's going to tell us in the next verse, 17, that beyond them is the Paramatma. And then in the 18th verse, he'll tell us, but there's a higher person than that, Bhagavan, and that's me. So he's saying like that. Now, there are many people in this world who think they're God, and they speak like they are, very full of themselves, glorify themselves in their activities, what they've done, what they've achieved, different kinds of things, their qualities. So how do we feel when somebody speaks their own praises to us? What kind of emotions go through the heart? Would you like to put a word on that facial expression, Tapasvini?
Uncomfortable.
What else do we feel? Are we happy to hear someone glorify themselves? What's our reaction? Come on. Krishna Priya.
I mean, if you're not that.
What's that?
Yeah,
hey, come on, you're not all of what you're saying you are. What's that? get real. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Any other thoughts that we have on this? Yeah, you should have. Yeah, the person is actually an illusion. That's a good one. Yeah. Aha, this is an interesting point. Your consciousness. Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point. How we react to someone praising themselves will depend on our consciousness. Krishna Priya. I'd like to hear it from them.
Yeah.
Bettina, you wanted to say something? That's interesting. So it will be a statement of his perspective on life, his vision on things. And usually it's different than ours. Huh? You see that he's got a different problem we have. Huh? Like that. So what Krishna is going to do now in these verses, he's going to tell us he's the greatest. He's going to do this. Huh? And because the root cause of us feeling uncomfortable when somebody starts to sing their own praises essentially is envy. Listen, I'm the best. Don't compete with my position. How dare you compete with my position? You're not God, I'm God. It's very, very subtle, but it's there. We feel very uncomfortable when somebody else is even praised by another person, not the person himself. We don't feel comfortable because it challenges our superiority, our concept that maybe we are the best. So the problem is that Krishna is the best. He's Krishna. He's God. And somehow or other he has to get it through our thick skulls that he is God and he is worth surrendering to. So he's going to do that now. But because he's an expert counselor, advisor, psychologist, all these things, he's the best in every field, he's decided, well, I know what the reaction is going to be if I say it myself. So I'll quote from Shastra. I'll give it straight from the book. Then they can't, you know, there may be some reaction if there's still some demoniac tendencies in the heart, but at least those who are a little sincere and have faith in the Shastra, they'll say, well, you know, Shastra says like this. So he's going to be giving us the essence of the Vedanta Sutra in five verses today, three in essence. So let's have a look at these three. These are, yeah, sure. It depends on their mindset, really. Because if that I'm the best is coming from intense pride, then you probably wouldn't interact with them too much because it would be a waste of time. Because pride is a symptom of ignorance. And ignorance, when you stir it, turns into anger. It goes up a little bit into passion and becomes very angry. So, you know, Prabhupada, you know, you can just, he gave some examples with dealing with these kind of people. You say, yes, 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 you're a very great man. Just take a book, take a little prasad. You're great, yeah, no problem. And leave it at that. Because you stir it, you know, it'll be a hornet's nest or a bee's nest there. If, you know, they're a little bit lighter, you know, their consciousness is not so thick with pride, then you may, if you feel comfortable with it and confident with it, you might like to try and preach to them about why they feel like that, but how that's not actually their situation. You really have to take it on an individual basis. Yeah, Krishna Priya. Yeah. It's basically the qualities that are rightfully Krishna's are the people manifest. It's not that they think I'm God, but they manifest those qualities that actually only God has. For example, controllership, doership. They think they're the doer. They don't understand. You know, like you find that especially with wealthy people. They're convinced that they've made it, like new wealth. They've made it this lifetime through business or whatever. They're convinced that they made the money. It's theirs. And they're going to enjoy it and they're going to control it. So all of those tendencies of doership, I'm the doer, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, these are all misappropriate. They're more Krishna's position. So they have this kind of mentality. It's not that they're thinking I'm God, but they are very much identifying with the qualities of one who is God.
So could you say that to a degree we all have that quality?
Definitely. We wouldn't be here otherwise. Of course we can dovetail. We can dovetail these propensities. Controllership usually means that there's quite a lot of passion there. And passion means intelligence. Intelligence in the senses they manifest from passion. So they can be utilized in Krishna's service, you know, in management. If they're tempered properly with Krishna conscious practices, they can make for a very dynamic situation. So these qualities can be dovetailed. We just have to be under expert guidance so we understand how to do it. Okay, let's move on. So let's have a look at these first three verses, 16 to 18. Here Krishna is saying, there are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. Besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord Himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. Because I am transcendental, beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as the Supreme Person. Actually, these three verses are often referred to as the Trisloki Gita. There's a reason for that, or a couple of reasons for that. They're very, very important verses, because, especially for preaching, because in a nutshell they give us Sambandha Gyan. And they talk about the three levels of realization. The first, the 16th, is talking about Brahman. Here we're essentially looking at the living entities as Brahman, those who are fallible, those who are not. The second one, or 17, is looking at Paramatma, and the third is looking at Bhagavan. So this is a basic information that we need, have some understanding of who we're relating with. And Krishna is giving us it in the Trisloki Gita. And Krishna in 15:15, he told us that he was the knower of the Vedas and the compiler of the Vedanta. So in these three verses, he's going to help us transcend the material existence by summarizing the essence of the Vedanta. Huh? What he's compiled, he's now going to tell us the essence of it. He's a qualified person to do that. So let's just read verse 16. Again, there are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible, and in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. So, Prabhupada has got some very interesting points to say here in his purport. I'll just read a little of it. We'll start from the beginning. As already explained, the Lord in his incarnation as Vyasadeva compiled the Vedanta Sutra. Here the Lord is giving in summary the contents of the Vedanta Sutra. He says that the living entities are innumerable, can be divided into two classes, the fallible and the infallible. The living entities are eternally separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When they are in contact with the material world, they are called Jiva Bhuta, and the Sanskrit words given here, Chara Savani Bhutani, mean that they are fallible. Those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called infallible. Oneness does not mean that they have no individuality, but there is no disunity. They are all agreeable to the purpose of creation. Then if we go to the bottom of the purport, about 8 lines from the bottom, some interesting points here also. In the material world, the living entity undergoes 6 changes: birth, growth, duration, reproduction, then dwindling and vanishing. These are the changes of the material body. But in the spiritual world, the body does not change. There is no old age, there is no birth, there is no death. There, all exists in oneness. Chara Savani Bhutani. Any living entity who has come in contact with matter, beginning from the first created being Brahma down to the small ant, is changing his body. Therefore, they are all fallible. In the spiritual world, however, they are always liberated in oneness. So here, we're talking about oneness, how the infallible soul is in oneness with Krishna. And what is Prabhupada saying here? We've just read it. What does he say? He's giving 2 points of this oneness. Right, cooperative, yeah, good. And what was the other one? Towards the end of the purport, we and the body are one. We and the body are one. It's not that we have to drop it. It's spiritual body. It's not different from us. So in that sense also there is a oneness. So let's have a look at these two points a little bit. This kutastha, oneness of desire, this is something we can aspire for here. To be detached like Krishna is detached. Not to desire independently from him. And be surrendered to his plans. Not be so busy making our own, but be surrendered to his plans. So, in other words, to have a harmony, be in harmony with Krishna's interests. And in the second point, Prabhupada here is pointing out the superiority of spiritual existence, that there's no difference between us and our body there. So all of these aches and pains that stop us going to Mongolati and stop us going on parakrams and so many things, they're not there. The body is a manifestation of our consciousness, spiritual consciousness. It's fully effulgent, fully knowledgeable, fully in bliss. So it's no longer an impediment. When you're young, it's not such an impediment. And actually, there are just different impediments. When we're young, the impediments come in the form of sexual attraction, all the things that come with passion. That's such a botheration. Too much energy, not knowing what to do with it, you know. And then as you get older, then the body starts to break down. The problems just change. It's just changing the load from one shoulder to the other shoulder, really. The same load. So this body is a load. It's such an impediment to what we could do for Krishna. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the liberated senses. When the senses, not only us, but everything that we have becomes Krishna conscious. The senses become independently conscious, independently Krishna conscious. How much more we could do for Krishna? All of those senses could act independently of each other, or they could work in harmony. We're doing so many more things, so much more of the time. So whether we're in a young body or an old body, all of them, all stages has its limitations. So Prabhupada is pointing out here that this is an artificial imposition on us, the soul. That the happy situation is when everything's one. Not meaning that we merge or anything, but rather that the body is not different than us, the soul. We have a spiritual body. In verse 17, which we'll read again now, Krishna is talking of a personality who's higher than these two souls he's mentioned in 16. He says, besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. So the word vibhata in this verse indicates clearly that Krishna is talking of the super soul here, his manifestation as a super soul. Yesterday, in verses 12 to 15, he was explaining the different ways that we are maintained by him. But here, today, he's directly telling us that it's not him as Bhagavan that is maintaining the living entity. As Bhagavan, he maintains the devotee. Pure devotee is maintained directly by Bhagavan. But the living entity in general, he is maintained by the super soul. So this is actually basically what he's telling us here. Okay, let's go on to 18. And in this verse, Krishna is explaining that he's the source not only of fallible and infallible souls, but he's also the source of the Paramatma. He says, because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. So he's really qualifying what he's saying here. He's telling us it's said in the Vedas, you know, it's a safe thing that he's saying. The Prabhupada says some interesting things in his purport. We'll start from the beginning. No one can surpass the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Neither the conditioned soul nor the liberated soul. He is therefore the greatest of personalities. Now it is clear here that the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are individuals. The difference is that the living entities, either in the conditioned state or in the liberated state, cannot surpass in quantity the inconceivable potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is incorrect to think of the Supreme Lord and the living entities as being on the same level or equal in all respects. There is always a question of superiority and inferiority between their personalities. The word Uttama is very significant. No one can surpass the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these three verses, I think it was Sankaracharya that actually gave that name to them, but they are very much seen by the Acharyas as essential verses of the Gita and are called Tri Sloka Gita because they give us the essence of Sambandha Gyan. Now it's very interesting that the next two verses which we'll be looking at today deal with Abhideya and Prayojana respectively. Like 19 is dealing with Abhideya and 20 with Prayojana. In 19, Krishna says, "Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharata." So here Krishna is essentially, what he's doing in essence, is he is explaining what a person who understands 16 to 18 properly would do. If you have realized and understood 16 to 18, then the natural thing that you would do is to surrender to him and love and serve him. Isn't it? So that's what he's basically saying here. The Abhideya is to actually engage in pure devotional service, full devotional service to him. And when we're engaged in that circumstance, then as Krishna is giving in the purport, we are sarvavit. Then we are truly the knowers of everything. To be understanding Sambandha Gyan, to have accepted it, have no more doubts, to be fully engaged in devotional service, then that is the position of sarvavit, or one who is really fully in knowledge. It's not a matter of how much information we have, it's a matter of realization. So verse 20, this actually is an interesting verse. It's dealing very subtly with Prayojana. Prayojana is an interesting word in the Sanskrit. Most times we say that it means goal, the goal. But a closer meaning, but a more subtle meaning, is need, the need of the soul. So you have like an almost like an external and an internal reason. So it can mean either the goal or the need of the soul. Prayojana. Like Mahaprabhu gave us Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. So that last one. No, it's not part of the verse, it's part of the explanation of the verse. Is that okay? So Prayojana basically means the goal for which we're attaining. And why do we have that goal? Because it's the need of the soul. That's what we really need. So what we really need to do is to surrender to Krishna in love and engage in his service. That's the goal. Because it's the need of the soul. So this verse, this 20th verse, also acts as a summary to the whole 15th chapter. It's very interesting. And in essence what he's saying here, we'll read what he says here. "This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures, O sinless one, and it is now disclosed by me. Whoever understands this will become wise and his endeavors will know perfection." Now to understand this means we have to overcome envy. This chapter is called Purushottam Yoga. We have to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Person. And if we want to link with him, we want to develop a relationship with him, then we have to accept that. We can't say, "Well, maybe, but, you know, anyway, you're a nice guy. I like the way you play the flute." You know, not like that. We have to accept, no, this is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, I'm a person, but I'm not the Supreme Person. I have knowledge, but not supreme knowledge. My source of bliss is my relationship with him. We have to accept this. If we can accept that, if we can put the envy in a box and put it somewhere out of sight for a while, then we can enter into this chapter and understand. And if we can enter into this chapter, then the rest of Bhagavad Gita will make sense. By the time we come to 1866, we'll be ready for it. Or at least a little closer to being ready for it. Yeah, Krishna Priya.
Not quite clear how this verse explains either need or
What's that?
I'm not quite clear how this mm-hmm. person's
saying
we need to understand.
Yeah. As I said, it's very, very subtle. It's in the statement, whoever understands this will become wise and his endeavors will know perfection. So Krishna is saying basically that he's everything, and one who understands that and practices that, then he will attain perfection and wisdom. It is a very subtle statement. It's not a direct statement. Yeah. But it's a Prayojana verse. Okay. So if we want to, this is what's so amazing about Prabhupada's purports. You could read this whole chapter and think that it's got something to do with the externals. You know, the banyan tree and the transmigration process is all very interesting information. Yes, are we able to preach this very nicely now? We could think like that. In fact, we've probably read it like that many times. Huh? But actually, by the mercy of Prabhupada's purports, we can understand the crux of what he is saying here, especially in his 1520 purport, the last paragraph. We have looked at this before, but we'll have another look at it. Because we can understand from this what is necessary for us to get out of this tree of entanglement. So here, Prabhupada is saying, while one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees and full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of the heart is that as one increases the propensity to lord it over the material nature, he becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of heart. So this is actually, in essence, what we have to deal with. In studying this chapter, we should be looking at it in terms of this thing, how to overcome these two weaknesses of heart. We'll do a workshop on that when we finish going through the verses in about 2-3 minutes' time. And just explore it a little bit in a group discussion, whole group discussion. So, it's basically these two very powerful anattas. In Harinam Chintamani, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that this cloud that is stopping the holy name from rising like a sun within our hearts, the cloud that's stopping that happening, is made up of three types of anattas. The first one is called asat trishna, or hankering for illusory things, desiring things that are not related to Krishna. And then the second one is shuddhaya durbalyam, or weaknesses of heart that arise from spiritual weaknesses. Our practices are weak, or our association is weak, things like that. And the third one, which is always there, is aparad. So these three, he categorizes a little differently from Nectar of Devotion, but I found that interesting in terms of the discussion that we'll have this morning. Okay. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur from Harinam Chintamani. It's an essential book for anyone who wants to improve their chanting. Okay, is there any questions on anything I've said in class to this date, up until now? Yeah. Yeah. Would you like me to write the Sanskrit on the board? Would that make it easier? Okay, let's do that.
Durbalyam. So this means without strength. Balyam means strength. Dur, without. So it's a heart without strength. Because our practices are weak, unregulated. And we have to understand that Nectar of Devotion explains to us that one group of anattas comes from bhakti improperly performed. So if we're not attentive in our practices of bhakti, we are creating anattas by that. So that's one of the ways that this kudarabhavya can manifest. And then the third one is aparad, which most of us are familiar with. So these three groups are given there in Harinam Chintama.
That's okay? You had another question also? Purushottam means Supreme Person. So what basically we're doing in this chapter is talking Sambandha. If we don't have the proper vision, for example, say I want to have a relationship with you, but I'm convinced I'm Napoleon, and I'm convinced that you're my enemy. Okay, so what kind of relationship are we going to have? It's going to be pretty wild, isn't it? So if we get the idea right, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I'm an insignificant jiva on Earth planet trying to get my japa together. Okay, that's actually the situation. Then if I get that right, then from this, you know, the Purushottam Yoga, linking up with the Supreme Person. So first stage is Sambandha. This is where the so-called rasics and the babajis get it all wrong, because they think they can jump over the first step. The first step is that we have to know who we are. We have to know who Krishna is. We have to know what is the nature of the spiritual and material energy and how the whole thing interacts. That's the basic step. This is why Prabhupada constantly said, because of our backgrounds also, constantly, you're not the body, you're Krishna's servant. You're not the body, you're Krishna's servant. Why? Because if we don't get the Sambandha Gyan right, if we don't get the relationship right, how anything can fructify from that relationship? Nothing can fructify from an you can't make advancement from an artificial platform. So, you know, like, it's essential. It may appear at times, you know, boring, you know, dry. But, you know, like a mother, she has great love for her child, but doesn't mean she likes changing the nappies. Isn't it? Staying up all night with a kid that's got fever is not enjoyable, but it's part of the work, part of what we're doing. So our work is to, you know, work our way back to Godhead. So we have to take the good with the bad. We have to take the time to understand who we really are, who Krishna really is, and how we can best relate to him. Because if we don't take the time to do that, and we can see this very clearly in the movement, those who haven't been trained in the science of Krishna consciousness, who don't have a taste for reading Prabhupada's books, you can see that they don't relate properly with devotees. They don't relate properly even with the deities. They don't relate properly with Krishna's energy. Their whole energy is rough. Rough. It's rough. And it just doesn't come across properly. It just doesn't work. So we have to take the time to see how things are, you know. We're going to be having a good look at this in the 16th chapter, where we explore the demon in us. Very interesting chapter. So we'll be looking at that in a couple of days' time. Okay, yeah. From the Harinam Chitamani, Hrithai Dubalyam, actually, anything, any attachment that we have that is not related to Krishna or can't be utilized in this service, and any vision that we have that is of something different than Krishna and his energies is a weakness of heart. We can look at it at all sorts of levels. Like when we first come to devotional service, we'll tend to look at it in terms of externals and gross. You know, if I don't go to Mangaladi, I'm in Maya. You know, if I don't do this, you know, we talk in terms of external activities and like that. But then as we are longer and longer in the movement, we start to realize that we have to start looking internally. And if there's anything in our consciousness that is not connected to Krishna, then we ought to have another look at it. For example, so many things. One that comes immediately to mind is something like astrology. You know, it actually, there are different levels of consciousness that we all have. So what is acceptable at one level won't be acceptable at a higher level. If someone has a newcomer to devotional service, you may accept that they have an interest in astrology. But someone who's in the higher levels, it sort of it can be taken as a sign of lack of faith in Krishna and his control of our life. You know, that can be even taken as a lack of faith in Shastra. Nectar devotion says if we go before the deities and clap our hands, the lines in our hands change. Right? Because it means also, but it may be a subtle thing, but it means also that we are still subtly identifying with the gross body. Because the karma that the astrologers are looking at has to do with janma, has to do with the birth of this body. It has nothing to do with the soul. It also means that we are still working on the platform of duality. with working and what's good for me, what's bad for me. And we mean by that what's going to give me material happiness or sadness. So, you know, we have to, like, it's not that we can take it that all the time something's good or all the time something's bad. We have to come gradually to a point where everything is dovetailed with Krishna. But then those who are young to the movement, we can't say, hey, give that up, give this up, you know. You can't do like that because it's artificial. And they won't be able to digest it. But that doesn't give you an excuse to say, well, I'm going to go and have a look too. You know, looks interesting. This guy looks like a really good astrologer. I'm going to check him out. Not like that, you know. We have to remain very, very focused. Very, very focused. Right? As we read earlier in Bhagavad Gita, if we have many, many desires, independent desires from Krishna, then the intelligence will be many branched. And when the intelligence is many branched, there's no speed of progress. In fact, you pretty much stay in one place. You get locked in. So we have to sort of look at it in terms of our level. We have to honestly assess what level am I on. That's why books like Harinam Chintamani are wonderful books. Because we can, and Madhuya Kadambani also. When we read them, we can get a little bit of an idea of what is our real situation spiritually. And then when we know that, then we can work from it. You know, we can do like that. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's very true. We have to be seeing things. This is a very, very good point. Thank you for raising this. This is an essential point. Yeah, I'm just about to repeat it. This is an essential point for constant, rapid advancement in devotional service is to always see with fresh vision. Never assume that you know something. Because assuming you know something blocks things, gifts that Krishna may want to give you. Assuming I know something is a sign of pride. But if we can see that every circumstance is a new circumstance, and there may be something here that Krishna wants me to deal with, or wants, he's giving a gift of some kind or another for my benefit. And actually we mentioned many, many, a couple of months ago now, the difference between the stone and the fish, isn't it? What we're attempting to do by practicing devotional service has come to a point where the heart is as soft as melted butter, right? Maybe still framed right now, but you know, we have the idea that it will come to a point of being like molten butter. So, you know, if you throw a rock into a lake, it just goes straight to the bottom. It creates a bit of a disturbance and goes straight to the bottom, isn't it? But a fish, you know, it can swim around, you know, no problem, no problem. So we want the heart to become as agile as a fish. This means the consciousness in effect. Then we can swim in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We want to swim. We don't want to just read the book. I mean, it's wonderful to read the book, you know, Nectar of Devotion. But we want to swim in this ocean. So to swim in this ocean, the consciousness has to become fluid. Oh, you want that, Krishna? Fine, no problem. Oh, you want this now? Okay, fine. That the mind and the consciousness becomes fluid. We become open, whatever he wants. We're his servants, whatever he wants. That's one thing I've learned from being in India. Sometimes when I, you know, visit wealthy people's homes and they have live-in servants, and those servants, you know, I've learned so much about what it means to be a servant by watching the good ones. You know, just the master's every whim is what they do. And there's no feeling that it's improper to do it or why I have to do it or anything. It's just their function. It's just what they do. You know, I've learned so much about what my position should be in relation to Krishna. It's a lot sweeter, of course. He's not going to ask me to make tea and biscuits for him. Be more interesting. Yeah. Any other questions before we go into workshop on these other points? What's that? Yes, these have come from Harinam Chintamani. I'll take them off the board now because otherwise they'll bewilder us as we get into workshop. So what I thought to do, because Prabhupada is specifically mentioning two weaknesses of heart that have to be dealt with, to get out of this labyrinth of the material world, are controllership and overlordship,
and attachment to matter instead of attachment to Krishna. Can be all sorts of levels, subtle degrees. So here, in Manasa Siksha, Raghunatha Goswami explains that this is essentially coming from pride. And there are six aspects of this pride, which he lists as being illusion, deceit, pretense, ignorance, deviousness, and offenses. And then we've mentioned this one before in the first chapter where we talked about Arjuna's ignorance, but I feel at this point in time it would be nice to go over it again. We have a lot more knowledge now than we had at this point. So attachment to matter essentially comes from ignorance. And Vishwanath Chakravidathoko in Madhurika Dhammani, he explains that there are five aspects of that ignorance. Avidya, Ashmita, Raga, Dvesha, Avinavesh. So of course pride is also an aspect of ignorance. It's coming from ignorance. If we actually knew our real position, there is no way that we could be proud. We are in a crippled, covered position. We're not in our constitutional place or position. Nothing to be proud about. We put ourselves in that circumstance. So what I thought to do is we will go through these. Yeah. Yeah, I will. Yeah, no problem. So we'll do that first. Since Madhuri has asked us, we'll translate first the five aspects of ignorance. So this is from the second shower of nectar of Madhurya Kadambani. I'll give you the page reference in case you'd like to look it up later. It's page 13. Here, we're talking about looking at the first stages of devotional service and just coming to a point where our sadhu sangha and our bhajana kriya are starting to bud. So here, we're looking at, and the other interesting thing about these five aspects of ignorance is that they all result from impious background, previous sinful activity. That's very interesting. It's an indication, and when I looked at them and I realized how much I'm still covered by them, I realized I must have been a real rascal. You know. These ones. Yeah, they come basically coming from past sinful activity. Okay, so avidya, here we're talking, you know, translation-wise it means ignorance, but specifically, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is telling us, it means to mistake what is impermanent for permanent. In other words, we get it all back to front. We think that something that is full of misery will actually give us bliss. Whether it be a person, a situation, we think, oh, this will be really blissful. But actually this thing is a source of misery. We think that to be pure, which is impure. So we've got it all back to front. This is the nature of ignorance. We get it all backwards. And we think, the basic bottom line one is, we think the self not to be the self. We don't understand what the self is. We think this, the body, is me. Or me, I'm the mind. We don't understand that I'm actually spirit soul, servant of Krishna. Do I need to repeat that or can I move on? The self, yeah. We take something that's not the self to be the self. Like we think we're the mind, think we're the body, like that. The second one is asmita, a false ego. This is misidentification of I and mine. And another aspect of this is that we only accept as real what we can see and prove with our senses. Only accept what we can see with our senses as being real. If I can see God, I believe Him. If I can't, I don't. Bash. Also, the third one is raga, attachment. This is a very interesting one and something that we really as devotees have to come to terms with, especially if we come from Western background, because our concept of religion is very much dominated by Christian thought.
the idea of if I do good, I'll get good, if I do bad, I'll get bad. But actually, it's got nothing to do with transcendence. So this raga doesn't only mean attachment, but it means the desire to obtain material happiness and decrease suffering. Huh? We want to be happy, and we don't want the suffering. But the unfortunate situation is that the pious reaction and the impious reaction both have to go. So we're going to have to suffer both, and we're going to have to transcend it. So this is a very subtle one that we have to deal with. A lot of devotees have trouble with this one, especially as they get older. Fourth one is dvesha, or hatred. It also means envy, but it means aversion to unhappiness. We have an aversion, actual aversion to unhappiness and to causes of unhappiness. So we won't deal with them. This is one of the sins of the person in the mode of goodness. They just don't want to know about it, you know. So aversion to unhappiness or the causes of unhappiness. And then the fifth one, sorry, I'm going too fast. That we're aversion to unhappiness and to the causes of unhappiness. We're also averse to the causes of unhappiness. That this is one of the problems that they have, that they are very much trying to control things so that they're always happy. Because you're attached to happiness. You're attached to knowledge. So they tend to look down on those who don't have knowledge and like that. You know? I actually had this is very revealing about my low state of consciousness, but I'll share it with you because it's a very good example. It was a couple of months ago now, but there was a Shudra, a worker in MBT, and he was watering the lawns. And I have a Kelikadamba tree in my front garden. I'm very attached to it. You know, it's related to Krishna. I'm attached to it. So he decided, I don't know whether he just got up or what, but he decided he was going to wash out his mouth and all everything else that was in it and spit it onto the lawn. And I got really disturbed and I chastised him for that. And then the washing lady, the lady that does my washing, I just don't get time to do it here, but she comes and does my washing. She didn't come that day. And she's very, very regulated. She's a very nice person. She didn't come that day. And I had a realization by Krishna's grace that Shudran means both. Shudran means unclean habits and all these kind of things. You can't expect high consciousness and activity from a Shudran. If you could, they wouldn't wash your clothes. They'd be doing something else. So, you know, it taught me forbearance, it taught me tolerance, that I have to see that it's a whole package that goes. If there's a low consciousness, it means the activities and everything will be relatively low, but it means that they'll also have the patience and the, you know, the thickness, they'll be able to do things like spend all day washing clothes and things. You know, so like we have to look at the modes that are governing a person and work within that. We can't sort of separate out what we like and don't like. So I realized that was an example of this in me. Yeah, because it interferes where their regulation interferes with their stability, their peace, they can't handle it. And this is one of the reasons that attachment, goodness is good, because it's a springboard that we can go into transcendence from. But attachment to goodness is bad. Because what it does is it breeds it breeds not only desires but qualities that are ignorance. For example, on someone who's attached to knowledge, tendency is to become proud and develop a critical mentality. This person doesn't know what he's talking about, you know. And also they're attached to peacefulness, being happy. So they're going to avoid anything that's not going to make them happy. And that can lead to quite a perverse type of personality, not a balanced personality. So it's not the mode that's a problem. The modes are not a problem. We have to use them, and everything we do, we're using the modes. It's the attachment to them that's the problem. And the last of these is abhinivesha. And this is instinctively clinging to bodily enjoyments. We've got attachments and enjoyments that we like, and we instinctively cling to them. We're just not going to give them up. Instinctively, yeah, instinctively clinging means like, you know, I'm really holding on to something. I'm not even thinking about why I'm holding on to it. I'm just holding on to it. you know, like it's a really base type of feeling that we have. And a fear that death will separate us from these enjoyments. We're afraid of death because we fear that it will separate us from what we've got, our wealth, what it can buy. We're afraid of that. It's an interesting one. Yeah. So this one is that when we're holding on to, we're not being intelligent, we're holding on to things, bodily enjoyments, not understanding that they're going to cause us pain. We're just holding on to them for no good reason. We're just attached. So we're holding on. And we're fearful of death because that will take everything away. That's very good. If we have these kind of things, they can be dovetailed in devotional service. So if we are going to be fearful, we should be fearful of offending Vaishnavas, offending Shastra by not taking care of it properly, all these kind of things. So all of these emotions are part of being a person. The emotions are not the problem. It's where we direct the emotions that is the problem. We're directing them out towards the material energy, which means that we're dragged out as well, and we'll stay there. We won't transcend. So this is not certainly not a problem. Is there any other questions on these five before we move into Manusiksha? Yeah. It's not so simple because there will be different makeups. Did everyone hear the question? Can you give us a type, a personality type? You see, the problem with these is that if anyone has embodied, all five will be there to different degrees, and there will be different emphases, but all five will be present, because these are the five aspects of one who is in ignorance. So ignorance means, I think I'm the body, I'm conditioned. So they will be there, all of the aspects will be there, but it may be subtler in some than in others. So you have to really be looking at the mix with the individual. Just as we were looking yesterday at the three colors, we had the three colors on the table. It looked very simple and, you know, put it in the jars and, you know, it's real simple, we can understand it. But the problem is that that's not how it works in real life. Krishna has a chapter called here, The Three Modes of Material Nature. But those modes interact in so many ways that we end up with, you know, 84 lakhs of varieties of those three modes interacting. 8,400,000 mixes. And that's not individuals, that's species. Can you imagine how many is it in terms of individuals? You know, none of us look alike. We're one species, but we're not looking alike. So it's inconceivable to think of how many conglomerations of these things can come together. So if you know these five, then in your dealings with people, you can sort of get some clear idea of what you're dealing with individually by individual. But to try and put a rubber stamp on each one as a personality type. Yeah, well, this is why Prabhupada calls the three modes chains. And he says that the mode of goodness is a gold chain. So you feel very comfortable and you feel, you know, like you've really got the best. But actually it's strangling you, you know. So the problem with mode of goodness is that you feel everything's fine and you forget death is coming, next birth is coming, you haven't got it worked out. So this is the problem. That's why I said last week that the problem with mode of goodness in essence is that self-satisfaction means you don't hear super soul. You just don't hear. You know, roll over and go back to sleep. That's the nature of it. Any other questions on these five? Basically, with looking at mode of goodness and how it relates to us as devotees, whether it's favorable to our devotional service or whether it's just attachment, we have to understand that mode of goodness, Prabhupada and Krishna have been saying it throughout Gita, especially Prabhupada has been saying that it is the best mode to work from in devotional service. But if it becomes an interference to our devotional service, then we should do the needful. I think I gave this example before, but I'll give it again because it's a brilliant one. When Hari Sori Prabhu was Prabhupada Kripa, he was a Maharaj at one stage, and he was visiting Australia, And he went to one of our farms there, and he was walking past the Didi kitchen and smelt this incredible stench, really bad smell. And he went in to see what was happening. And the devotee who was trying their best to cook within all this madness for the Didis said, well, it's a weekend and we can't get out a plumber and the sewage is blocked. So it was all coming up through the drain, up through the sink. There's the Didi kitchen and somebody's in there cooking for the Didis. He's a sannyasi. He was up for guruship at that time. He's a sannyasi in his silks and God knows what. And he just said, this is ridiculous. You're supposed to be devotees. You're supposed to be here for Krishna's pleasure. And he just went up to his room, took off his cloth, put on a gamsha, and went down into the sewer pit and cleaned it. So this is the difference. It is the best for us in normal circumstance to be in the mode of goodness. But if there's an emergency in the preaching field, an emergency with a marathon coming up for the deities, for a festival or something like that, then we should be part of it. We should pull our weight. However we do that, it may be that our pulling our weight means that we are in the mode of goodness. Our pulling our weight for Janmasthami may mean reading Krishna book to the deities. You know, it's not much of a marathon, but that may be what somebody asks us to do. So we just have to see, you know, what is real and what is not real like that. Always remember, this is the essential point, is to always remember that our designation is that we are servant of Krishna. We are not mode of goodness Walla or mode of goodness, you know, whatever. That's not really our interest. These are tools. The modes are tools for us. We use them for different purposes. But we use them, they don't use us. For example, if you're in a position of authority and someone has acted improperly, then you have to chastise. There are many different ways to chastise according to Manasamhita. You can ignore, you can do so many things. But anyway, so different ways you can chastise. And it means that when you're working like that, then your mood towards that person is not going to be using the mode of goodness. It's not going to be the mode of goodness. Maybe mode of passion, maybe mode of ignorance, but you're using it, and you're using it for a specific Krishna conscious purpose. So when you get angry with somebody, if it's controlled anger, you can feel the difference, because you don't feel the intelligence is disturbed, you don't feel the body is disturbed. You've got it under control, but you're using it for a particular purpose, like that. So we just have to see. We should start to see more and more that the modes are not something to run away from, but rather something to engage in Krishna's service. Where it's appropriate, we do it that way. Like that. It takes maturity. It's not something we can do in a hurry, but we need to do like that. I'd like to move on, if we can, to Manashiksha and speak a little bit about pride. I really don't like these short lessons. But anyway, what to do? is that okay if we move on a little bit? Because I wanted also to read you something very beautiful from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's final work, which is a very wonderful meditation and gives us the answer to both these problems in a nutshell. So Raghunath Das Goswami, in verse 1 of Manasiksha, under the heading Surrender Without Pretense, he talks about pride, and he gives these six symptoms of pride: illusion, deceit, pretense, ignorance, deviousness, and committing offences. He says there are different aspects of pride. And one thing that I found that was interesting is that he gives a definition of what is pretense and ignorance and illusion, and he puts them in stages. So in relation to the aspect of pretense as a sign of pride, he says, in practicing bhakti or devotional service, cultivation of desires and aspirations other than those that help one's pure love are considered pretense. That's a very deep definition. I'll read it one more time. In practicing bhakti or devotional service, cultivation of desires and aspirations other than those that help one's pure devotional love are considered pretense. Pretty all-encompassing. Of course, he's speaking on a very high platform here. He's talking from the platform, basically, you know, at least Nishtha, maybe Bhav. Then he says, when there is a predominance of fruitive activities, empirical knowledge, or practice of yoga in the execution of one's bhakti, ignorance increases and causes one to lose whatever true knowledge he has gained. It's interesting. So although these other processes of bhakti can bring us to the platform of these other processes of yoga can bring us to the platform of bhakti yoga, if we are too attached to them within the bhakti yoga process, they can bring our downfall. They can bring us back into ignorance. Found that an interesting point. Yeah, sure. He says, when there's a predominance of fruitive activities, which means basically karma yoga, empirical knowledge, jnana, or practice of yoga in the execution of one's bhakti, ignorance increases and causes one to lose whatever true knowledge he has gained. Because if we're involved with these things as an attachment, it means we're identifying like that. We're not identifying as Krishna's servant. We can use yoga. We can use inquiry, the process of inquiry. We can use things from the different levels of the yoga ladder in bhakti. Huh? They're there. That's not a problem. It's very helpful. But as soon as we become attached to them, it means that our identification is not as servant of Krishna. And then the problems come. And then he says, in other words, when service to Radha and Krishna is contaminated by any negative or unfavorable mood or practice, it becomes covered by maya or illusion. I'll read it again. In other words, when service to Radha and Krishna is contaminated by any negative or unfavorable mood or practice, it becomes covered by maya or illusion. And then he says of these six pride obstacles, which are indications of pride, he says of them, these are all obstacles which must be removed from the path of pure bhakti. And until one is free from the false pride born of varnashram dharma, material accomplishments, and forgetfulness of one's original spiritual identity, there will be no pure bhakti. So in essence, what we can say from looking at things the way Prabhupada would look at things is that as long as we are attached in any way to the position of anything but being Krishna's servant, it's a manifestation of pride. You know, anything that we think we've achieved, we think we have, we think we are, that is not in relation to Krishna and Krishna consciousness, is a manifestation of pride. Krishna says, "I am the ability of man." Huh? So how can we think we're a great scholar? We've just read yesterday that Krishna is our maintainer, spiritually and materially. How can I think I'm a Vaishnava, a Vaishnavi? Thinking I'm a Vaishnavi, thinking I'm a guru, these are the last nairs of maya. So we can see how subtle it becomes. And the only safe path, which is the one Prabhupada gives us on day one, gives us on grade two, three, four, five, six, today, tomorrow, every day, is you are not the body. You are Krishna's servant. This may seem really simple. It may not appeal to those that think, I want to be a rasik. I want to be this, I want to be that. I want to be an advanced devotee. But this is the straight, pure platform. This is the straight way to do it. I am not the body. I am Krishna's servant. Prabhupada gave it the first day. We just have to perfect it. Not so easy. We're trying. I wanted to read you something from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's last work. It's a very wonderful work, Swanyama Dvadasakam. It's based on another work by Raghunatha Goswami, which is very, very similar in purpose. It's his last work of Bhaktivinoda. And it's a series of verses which explain how to perform favorable devotional service, like the consciousness and the mood and the endeavor, what that should be if we want our devotional service to be favorable. And the sixth verse, I won't worry about the Bengali, but the sixth verse is a very beautiful meditation for overcoming everything that we've been discussing here, all the aspects of pride and all the aspects of ignorance. He says, my austere vow is constant devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Hari. In order to execute that vow, I have accepted the following qualities by my own endeavor. I practice great humility in my dealings with everyone. I try to keep simplicity and purity prominent in all of my practical arrangements. I maintain extreme tolerance in all types of favorable or unfavorable circumstances. I offer all respects to others, regardless of who they are. I feel genuine compassion for all living entities and act accordingly. There are many transcendental activities which are recommended by the great devotees who are fixed up in unalloyed devotional service to the lotus feet of Sriman Mahaprabhu, and these can be found described in the books that are full of the imperishable character and pastimes of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Only such transcendentally nectarian activities, being recommended by great devotees and practiced by Lord Chaitanya himself, are indeed my own. It's so beautiful. So he gives us basically a guideline of five simple points. If we follow, it will be very difficult to be in any way an offender. And then he tells us that the best way to get the nourishment to practice those five points is basically to read Mahaprabhu Lila. Because he's practicing for our benefit these things. Very, very beautiful. So we have 5 minutes. Do we have any questions? What's this? Mahaprabhu Lila. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat. Like that. Yeah. Yeah, sure. It's very beautiful. Actually, I'm inspired to read you the first verse also, which this is such a beautiful work. I'll read you the first one also. Here, this is especially beneficial if, and we do find this as we get older, we become more aware of how much we are identifying with the body. We are forced by circumstance to just realize I'm not as free as I thought I was of bodily identification. And I find this a particularly beautiful verse for dealing with that because it carries us over to other circumstances. This is the first verse of the same work. Then I'll read the sixth one. No matter whenever and wherever I happen to take birth, let my loving affection and attachment remain unshaken throughout each and every lifetime for the following things. For my divine spiritual master, for Sri Gauranga, for the detailed topics of pure devotional service as personally instructed by him, for the holy places of pilgrimage such as Sri Navadvip, Sri Chetra, Sri Vrindavan, which are all blooming with divine sanctity due to his performance of wonderful pastimes therein, for the Diksha Mantra bestowed upon me by the divine grace of my spiritual master, for the holy name of Sri Hari, for the most beloved eternal associates of the Lord, for the sacred days of celebration throughout the year, such as Sri Ekadasi, Sri Jamastami, Sri Radhastami, and the appearance and disappearance days of great Vaishnavacharyas, for the Lord's dear most devotees who strictly follow in the sacred footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, and for the holy scriptures narrated by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, such as Srimad Bhagavatam. So we can understand the potency of this kind of thing recited regularly. Yesterday we were talking about the transmigration process and how the role of the mind is the pivot. It's the essential point. So if we are shaping our mind with these kind of desires, daily we're reading them. Or perhaps in Kartik, every Kartik we read this every day. Chant them every day if we know Bengali. Then you can imagine that it will have an effect on the consciousness, on the desiring process, and then things will change. Can you imagine? Krishna is the source of all kindness. He is the source of all remembrance. So if we're chanting this every day of our lives, as soon as we become conscious of this work, we start to chant it. And we're wanting to remember these things. You think in the next life we get, if we don't make it back this time, we're not going to get this association? Or the followers of Rupa Goswami? Of a bona fide spiritual master, of the holy places of pilgrimage. It's very powerful. We shouldn't see only the negative side of what it means for a conditioned soul to transmigrate. We should think of it as devotees. What does this mean for me? Isn't it? Okay, I better quickly do this, otherwise I won't get it read. Verse 6 again, for Krishna Priya's pleasure. My austere vow is constant devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Hari. In order to execute that vow, I have accepted the following qualities by my own endeavor. I practice great humility in my dealings with everyone. I try to keep simplicity and purity prominent in all of my practical arrangements. I maintain extreme tolerance in all types of favorable or unfavorable circumstances. I offer all respect unto others, regardless of who they are. I feel genuine compassion for all living entities and act accordingly. There are many transcendental activities which are recommended by the great devotees who are fixed up in unalloyed devotional service to the lotus feet of Srimad Mahaprabhu. And these can be found in the books described in the books that are full of imperishable character of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Only such transcendentally nectarian activities, being recommended by great devotees and practiced by Lord Chaitanya himself, are indeed my own. It's very beautiful. Okay, so we better finish there. Please accept my humble obeisances.